Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Freezing to death is totally preventable, especially in a large city or community that has a network of social services. They're designed to catch and keep safe its most vulnerable citizens. But every year, people die from the cold, including elders, homeless, and people who abuse substances. Many are Native Americans. With services at hand, why are people still freezing to death? Is it time to rethink how we approach helping those in need? Join us after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Families of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls are meeting with federal officials in Canada. Today's meeting in Thunder Bay, Ontario, is to get input for a national investigation. In December, the government announced plans. First Nations leaders have long called for an official investigation by the federal government. There have been about 1,200 documented cases since the early 1980s. Canada's Justice Minister, Jody Wilson-Raybould, a former First Nations chief, spoke at last month's announcement.
As a first step, we will meet with the families in the National Capital Region with the goal of hearing their views on the design of the inquiry and what it needs to achieve.
The government plans to hear from more families in coming months and others, including national Aboriginal organizations. On Tuesday, the government launched an online survey to gather input. Today's meeting is closed to the public and media due to the nature of the discussions. Summaries of the discussions will be posted to the Indigenous and Northern Affairs Canada's website as soon as they're made available, as well as information on upcoming meetings. State regulators have again approved the Keystone XL route to go through western South Dakota. On Tuesday, the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission validated TransCanada's certification that the pipeline could still be built following conditions laid out in a 2010 permit. The commission conducted a hearing last year, which included testimony from opponents. Tribes and Native groups are among those fighting the pipeline. A presidential permit is still needed for the project. The Obama administration denied a permit in November. Proponents hope the next administration will overturn that decision. A pool of very cold air is set to descend from Canada into the Northern Plains this weekend. Forecasters say high temperatures may not reach zero and are urging people to find a way to stay warm before the cold conditions arrive. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Areas of the plains are getting ready for two slow-moving storms over the next several days. The first could bring a mix of rain or wet snow before the weekend. National Weather Service meteorologist Kerry Hanko says not much accumulation is forecast, but she says incredibly cold air will follow the system.
Well, we're looking at temperatures to drop well below zero in the overnight hours. In fact, we're looking at probably in the teens below zero Saturday night into Sunday night. Sunday looks to be one of the coldest days we've seen so far this winter season. It's only looking at highs right around zero, within a few degrees above or below.
Hanko says all nine of South Dakota's reservations will feel the extreme cold, as will people on tribal lands across the plains. She says anyone worried about staying warm should start planning for the conditions as soon as they can.
If you're out and about, just make sure you dress for the temperatures. It's going to be bitterly cold out there. Be careful. If you are concerned about the heat in your household, seek out your friends, seek out the neighbors, look for help at a shelter near you.
Hanko says the cold weather could continue into the middle of next week. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
A Save the Mounds rally is planned to take place next week at the Wisconsin State Capitol. The Ho-Chunk Nation is among those concerned about protecting centuries-old burial mounds near McFarland, Wisconsin. The tribe says a bill by a state senator would force the Wisconsin Historical Society to allow property owners to excavate the mounds. Tribal historic preservation offices from around the state say the bill threatens not only Ho-Chunk burial sites, but burial sites of other tribes. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Kawanak Broadcast Corporation is accepting artwork and reservations for the Alaska Native Art Auction, taking place February 18, 2016 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. Proceeds benefit Kawanak's news programming. Learn more at knba.org.
Support by the National Indian Health Board. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace ends January 31st. Many Indian health clinics are hosting enrollment events with help available. You may qualify for low-cost plans, zero copays, and deductibles. More info at healthcare.gov/tribal.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. In Gallup, New Mexico, on the border of the Navajo Nation, it was reported 17 people froze to death last winter. In most cases, dying from the cold could have been prevented. There are services, especially in urban areas, designed to help the most vulnerable citizens. But every year, people still die from the cold. In Gallup, many are from the Navajo Nation. Many point to alcoholism as the major factor. But others at risk include elders, other substance abusers, and those who are homeless. And what is the extent of this problem in other urban areas? What about in your own community? How many Native Americans are left out in the cold? And what are people doing to keep their most vulnerable community members from freezing to death? Join our conversation today by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us now from Gallup, New Mexico, is Carl Smith. He's the executive director of the Battered Family Services, and he is Navajo. It's our pleasure to welcome Carl to the hour. Hello, Carl.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you.
And Carl, you have a view on a city that many have at one time traveled through at one point or another. Carl, tell us about the situation in Gallup right now. I mentioned that there were 17 deaths in town last cold season, but what is the situation like this year?
I believe it's almost running. It looks like it's going to be running the same again, because I believe we already have 5 deaths of people freezing on the streets already. So I really don't see a significant change or impact from last year's death toll compared to this year.
And Carl, when we talk about people who have lost their lives to exposure, I think we're talking about other things too. Carl, anything you want to share about why we need to think about this more than just a person dying?
Well, Gallup is a very unique town. It's surrounded by Native American Indian reservations, primarily Navajo Reservation. And Gallup is financially feeding off primarily Navajo Indians. And like the first of the month, or when the Navajo tribe gets paid, you know, Gallup is filtered with thousands of vehicles, and you have traffic backed up, and you know it gets very hectic, and so this causes a lot of people to, in most cases, to stay in Gallup, to wander around, to meet people on the streets, and then there's people that continually live on the streets on a year-round basis, and It seems like we're getting more populated people that are on the streets. These people the majority of them do have homes that they can go back to, but they prefer to stay in Gallup. It's in the reservation area is so rural. The poverty is so high. There's no jobs, no economic development. There's really nothing set for Native peoples to thrive off on the Navajo Nation. So they go to the nearest town, and Gallup seems to be the popular one. most families living in rural areas don't have electricity, don't have running water, plumbing, and so most of these people that are on the streets have been either just, you know, they have families, but alcohol plays a huge role when it comes to family. It hurts the family, it causes embarrassment, and there's no hope. It develops with no hope. And when that happens, you know, the people on the streets, you know, our people, they seem to give up hope. And we do have a few services, social services in Gallup, but it's not making an impact from what I see today.
Thanks for that, Carl. And if you'd also like to comment, too, about this, you can call us right now, 1-800-996-2848 is our number. And when you hear that another life has been lost to exposure, do you often wonder what could have been done to have prevented that? You can call us, share your thoughts, 1-800-996-2848. And Carl, I understand that this topic is definitely close to you. Would you mind telling us about your son?
Yeah, my son, my oldest son, his name is Calvin Smith. He went missing in 2009, and it's a long story, but I'll try to make it as short as I can. He went missing, and his mom contacted me. His younger brother, who had recently finished his tour in Iraq, came home. And they called me, and they said he went missing. So I said, well, he's probably either in Albuquerque or Phoenix, because he lived on the streets. He really didn't live on the streets. He lived from motels. That's what's unique about Gallup, too. We have these rundown motels that, you know, it's not even suitable for habitat, you know. And we have our people living in there, drinking. And what my son did was he was a jeweler, so he made jewelry during the day, and he would sell it at the local restaurants, and then that would help him pay for another week of rent and to support his habit of really chronic alcoholic. So, and then a week went by, and then I got another call, and they said, you know, we still can't find Calvin. So through all of this, I got in my truck and left my house, which is about 12 miles out of Gallup, drove into Gallup, and for one odd reason, I went to a local bar on the east side of Gallup known as the Silver Stallion. I parked right there, and before I left my home, I told my son that I think I know where he's at. He's in that field. So when I got there, about 15-minute drive, there was police officers and the family members all combing the area. And I just walked across a four-lane Route 66 and then went across a railroad track and immediately turned left, and I walked 10 yards. And right there, it's all the field is full of brushes, tall brushes, about 4 feet. And I saw him laying there. And I already knew it was him, without even seeing his face or his clothes. So I walked around, I looked at him. He was all curled up, like he was in a position where he was like so cold that he just curled up, and he froze to death. I think his body was there for about 2 weeks. And I just knelt at his feet, at his shoe, and I told him, you know, I told him, I'm really sorry. Because I come from a severe chronic alcoholic background, drug use. I was homeless. I was living the streets at one time. And he's seen throughout his childhood. I raised him, me and him by himself. And he's seen me, what I did, what I went through, drinking every day, but remaining employed. And he saw me. And he saw all the violence, everything that has to do with alcoholism. He remained in school. He saw all of that. And that's why when I knelt down, I told him, I'm sorry, son, you know. Please forgive me. Please forgive me because of what I did and what you saw and what I put you through. This is how you ended up. I don't blame nobody but myself, I told him. But I told him, I need you to forgive me because that's how God wants it. And then before I got up, I told him, you know what I'm going to do for you, son? From this day forward, I'm going to work for people such as you. Anybody that's living in violence, anybody that's homeless, anybody that needs some type of a hand, I will do it for you, my son, I told him. And so,
Carl,
I got up. Yeah.
You know, just hearing that, I mean, wow, what a devastating moment. And, you know, our thoughts are to you and your family. It's not easy to be able to do this, but hearing how you have turned this into your life's work, I think is really encouraging. And Carl, it just makes us all stop and think. You know, when we are in urban communities, you know, you walk by people, you see them out there in the streets. And how often do people stop and make sure that they're warm, make sure they have a place to go at the end of the night, or that services are available? It gives us a lot to think about. And folks, that's why we put aside an hour today just constantly reading different reports of people who have lost their life to exposure. It makes you think, and we're wondering, you know, why is this happening in our communities? Why is there a constant pattern? Carl is giving us a view into Gallup, New Mexico, but we're not saying that's the only place that this happens. We know it happens throughout the country. And what are people doing? Give us a call. Our phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. And Carl, you just sharing that this is, you know, some of the fuel that feeds your fire to make sure that more people are safe or have somebody who cares or looking after them, making sure that they aren't out there in the cold. And Carl, is there anything else you'd like to say about, you know, we as communities to really think about the people who are in our community? Go ahead, Carl.
Well, one of the things I like to share is, you know, Gallup being situated in an area where it's surrounded by Native population, Gallup really, one thing it needs to do to address the problem is we have an over excess liquor license in Gallup. It's crazy. Every place you drive one block, there's a liquor establishment. And it's just enabling individuals to take advantage of it. And people have tried to address that, but it is so high up in politics that nobody really wants to address it or touch it. So nothing can be done about that from my perspective. But what needs to happen is we need to have rehabilitation centers. We need to build them. We need to provide long-term care for these individuals that are on the streets or that are continuing to come into Gallup. And we need to either build shelters for them because they don't want to utilize the detox center. They don't want to utilize a social services program. But Gallup needs to do something. Not only Gallup, but the state, McKinley County, the city of Gallup, and the Navajo Nation need to sit down and come to one agreement and work together, because what we're doing right now is not working. We need to really build and think about building rehabilitation centers for individuals.
All right. I think those are all great ideas, Carl. And thank you for being with us today, folks. If you just tuned in, we have Carl Smith on the line. He is the executive director of the Battered Family Services, and he comes to us from the Navajo Nation. If you'd like to share your thoughts today, give us a call. 1-800-99-NATIVE is the number. And during the winter time, when temperatures drop, you know, what community and social services are out there? Are there some services that are harder to deliver? What about your own city? How do you think they are handling the situation of helping people who are on the streets or who are at risk of losing their life to exposure? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. And Carl, when you are working with families there, you know, is there any kind of dialogue that happens that you feel is really necessary so that more people are getting services they need? Any thoughts, Carl?
Well, right now I'm trying to connect with some local political leaders here in Gallup. One of the ideas that was brought up from our mayor before re-election was that he would like to get a group together, a panel together, and have them evaluate every social services that's available in Gallup, and then try to combine as many as we can to develop an intervention plan. And I'm still trying to touch base with people on that because that's important. Everybody seems to be doing things on their own, like local church groups, local social service providers, even volunteers. You know, they're handing out gloves, jackets, they're handing out food. So one of the things that I address is that we're just enabling people to stay in Gallup. It's okay to drink. If you drink, we'll give you a jacket, we'll give you a blanket, we'll give you food. This is an everyday thing that's going on throughout the city. And the people that are on the streets know. Even when I was on the street, I knew what church to go to get food or to get money. I knew where to go to get a jacket or a pair of pants, and it just kept me in Gallup. We need to stop that. What we need to do is come together and talk about it and come up with an effective plan. But so far, it's not working.
All right. And, you know, when you get to that point where you're saying this isn't working, a lot of times, you know, that's the time for action. Folks, have you ever gotten to that point where you say this isn't working and this is what I'm going to do? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. Carl, we have a caller on the line. Let's say hello to Marty in Spokane, Washington, tuned in on KSFC. Marty, thank you for your call. And what would you like to share?
Hi. Am I coming through okay?
Yep. Hear you loud and clear.
Okay. I'm sorry. We got an interruption through the emergency thing. I'm really sorry about what your guest has had to go through. And I can't understand why news media does not report this and notify the public of the horror of this tragedy that's going on of people. It doesn't matter if they're Native American. There are other, all races out there freezing to death. And why isn't it not being addressed? You know, I know that there's some places they can go, but it's the fact that they don't even report it, you know, when this happens. I think it's horrible. And God bless you guys. Happy New Year. Bye.
All right, Marty, thank you for your call. And that's a great point to raise. You know, where is the media when, you know, this is going on in our communities? You can call in. What do you think about that? 1-800-996-2848. Carl, do you have any response on that?
There's a way to address it, but it involves a lot of politics. And that's very shameful for me to say because, you know, our local leaders are trying their best to do what they can, but, you know, our Navajo Nation government needs to come forward themselves. They ran a detox center here for a while, but, you know, I think they tackled it. They thought they could do it, but they couldn't make it work. They just ran it down to the ground and they pulled out. Navajo Nation is really responsible. They need to come forward and work with the city to address it. One of the ideas I came up with, and I addressed it to the city council and to the county commissioners, is that come up with drones. I've seen it work in other cities where drones, an officer can just sit there and fly a drone throughout the city that has body heat sensors, that has cameras, that's voice activated. And that, you know, they can run through their brushes, through the hills, and locate people that are potentially victims of exposure. And I brought that forth, and it can be cost saving. It also can be used for primary emergency response across town, where it can take a unit several minutes to get to one location, but it can take a drone within seconds to get to that location.
You know, Carl, turning to technology has definitely, you know, brought about many good things in our communities. And man, that sounds like a great idea too. I don't have the research on why the Navajo Nation pulled out of that detox center. But just hearing, you know, this response too, I think it's good to bring up when there are Native lives who are being lost in our communities, they're dying of exposure. You know, what role does the tribe play in that? Do we forget about our fellow citizens, our members from our tribes because they're living in the city? What do you think? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Carl, we're going to hear from a caller. We have Miles in Gallup, New Mexico, listening today on KGLP. Miles, what would you like to share?
Yes, I just want to speak to the fact of what he was saying about the Navajo Nation is to blame. But on top of that, the Navajo Nation is a fairly new government, which is a puppet government of the United States government, which we all know doesn't work very well at all for its own people. So how do we expect it to work for our people? And that leads to our population being not having very many opportunities, not having anything like he was speaking of. You know, some people have no water and whatnot, all of that. So how do you expect a nation which is in turmoil to be sustained? And then yet a town out here, border town, a nation is sustaining a border town, you know. It doesn't make sense. And then at the same time, the people that live here demonize us as being drunks or whatever, you know. They take it to that point, and then you see it when you're walking around how people act. Because I don't live in the town, but I live about 40 miles out, and I have to go there because there's nowhere else to get anything, which I do not like to do because I don't like the fact that we are sustaining an economy for them and building millionaires. Like, you know, with the jewelers and all those people, they're buying it for cheap and selling it to tourists, marking it up. You know, it's they're profiting off of us just the same way the U.S. government is profiting off of us and our resources and our intellectual property. You know, it's a problem much bigger than alcoholism. Alcoholism is the result of these problems which are happening every day. And that relates to my uncles and aunties, whoever being out here sleeping in the streets, you know?
Sure. Miles, that's a great observation. And I think, you know, you really hit it home when you say a lot of things lead to this. And that's why we're having the discussion. You know, it sounds like we're also talking about, you know, a housing crisis that's going on not only in our Native communities, but in urban centers. Services are being underserved. We know they're underfunded. We hear that a lot on this program. Folks, what does it take to turn things around of creating a better environment, a better community, where it doesn't lead to incidents of exposure or people dying on the streets? Give us a call. What do you want to talk about? 1-800-996-2848. And of course, if you have solutions, if you're living in a city who has been able to turn things around, what did it take? How much involvement and who all has to be at the table to make change? Call us right now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we're going to hear about other cities after the break. We want to hear about your city too. What are folks doing to make sure your community is strong? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. You can also reach out to us and send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We'll be back. Did you make a resolution to get your finances in order in 2016? Whether it's paying down debt or sticking to a budget, managing money can be tricky. Have you struggled to figure out how to manage your money? What did you resolve when it comes to money in 2016? Join us as we talk about getting a financial grip on the next Native America Calling.
Kuwanek Broadcast Corporation announces the Alaska Native Art Auction, taking place February 18, 2016, in Anchorage, Alaska. This one-of-a-kind event includes artwork from the Alaska Native community. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. If you would like to contribute art, reserve a table, or learn about sponsorship, visit knba.org. Proceeds benefit National Native News.
Support by Colorado State University. The CSU Native American Legacy Award makes in-state tuition rates available to students who are citizens of tribes with a historical legacy of occupation in Colorado or are registered citizens of any federally recognized tribe transferring from an accredited tribal college. Requirements and a complete list of eligible tribes and nations can be found at admissions.colostate.edu/Native American.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Meseta Pueblo, and it's our pleasure to have you connecting to us today on your favorite radio station as well as online. And we welcome all your feedback. If you ever want to reach out to us, you can send us an email. Send it to comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. If you'd ever like to post during the show, we take a look at them. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can also post your thoughts on Facebook on today's program post. And today we are taking a look at our communities. Often our communities rely on a network of social services to make sure no one goes without the basic needs. With a harsh winter weather upon us, falling through that safety net has grave consequences. And we're talking about the factors that lead up to people freezing to death and what some cities are doing to prevent that. And we want you to join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And are the programs in your community adequate? Is the lack of funding the main problem? And what programs are some other cities trying that hold promise that you wish were happening in your own backyard? Call us right now. Again, we want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. And we're going to go now to Anchorage, Alaska. On the line with us today is Lisa Caldera, and she's the program director for Brother Francis Shelter. It's our pleasure to have Lisa with us today. Hello, Lisa.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Lisa, we want to hear about your city. Anchorage, we know, faces a lot of heavy winters. What about in your community? Do people lose their lives to cold? And what do you feel are some of the factors that lead to that?
Each winter, and in fact, each year, we definitely lose members of our community due to exposure. Anchorage does experience a very long winter. At the end, there are normally multiple reports in the news and in the media about lives that have been lost. You know, we see a lot of individuals who still choose to camp during the winter times. Anchorage has a lot of green belts, so these spaces are great for campers, and therefore they can make that choice to stay independent and stay outside for whichever reason they choose. You know, the city definitely tries to get people inside. There are mechanisms to do that with emergency shelters, running from established shelters to a system of churches that have even taken folks when the cold alert is in effect, which means it's 45 degrees or colder. But there are still those that we lose each year.
And Lisa, when you take a look at the city and what folks are doing, do you feel that the city has a secure safety net to make sure you know, people are safe or emergency services are available?
I think that we have providers here who are definitely working within their scope. So if it were to be your emergency shelters in town that are serving adults or youth or families, and then you have other services, if it's emergency services, the fire department, police department, the hospitals, this network of churches. So there are responses out there. Are we meeting the need of everyone who is without a home on any given night? That's a question that I think as a city we are not just asking, but beginning to answer.
And I understand that the Anchorage Safety Center Patrol has saved lives. Is there anything you'd like to share about those efforts?
We definitely do have folks who are on the street every night looking after our individuals who are choosing to camp or stay outside. So if it's outreach teams from different organizations, there's also the Anchorage Safety Center that has vehicles that can patrol the city, picking up individuals who may be a danger to themselves or others because of the fact that they are intoxicated. So there are ways in which we can get at that individual in the moment. You know, nothing is probably ever better than if you see someone to check in on them. I say that making that human connection is probably the most important thing that we can do to prevent these outdoor deaths.
And Lisa, we definitely want to celebrate the efforts that are being done and, you know, where there is success. But, you know, we have to take a look at this. Every year, you know, we hear reports of people who have died from being out in the cold. You know, what do you feel really needs to be done so that those numbers, you know, I think we all wish that they didn't exist, but at least that those numbers don't rise. Lisa, what more needs to be done?
I think in order to prevent outdoor deaths, we have to make sure that everyone can be housed in the appropriate type of housing. There are many new efforts lately in the municipality for example, Housing First. The idea that there are individuals in our community who will never be able to probably stay in an apartment with a lot of barriers to it. So having these different sorts of housing, if it's affordable housing, low-income housing, Housing First, these combination of options enable us to meet the needs of the individuals that we're seeing. There's not one cause that someone is on the street, and therefore there's not going to be one solution to get them off the street.
And Lisa, what does it say about a community, you know, when there are people dying from the elements in urban areas? What do you think?
Well, I think it's a tragedy, and I think that what it says about a community is that it still has work to do. And I think that what's most important about when something like that happens is about the response. It's about not just the conversations that happen, but then the action that should follow those conversations. Most recently, the mayor of Anchorage has said he would like to have 300 units for the homeless within 3 years. That's a response to what has been seen here, and he's putting it into action. So I believe that while it's a tragedy for anyone to lose their lives, if it's in a home, in a hospital, on the street, we have to have the appropriate response and then the action that comes with it.
All right. Thank you for that, Lisa. And folks, we want to hear from you, too. You can call and share your thoughts. Maybe you have some ideas that you'd like to throw out there. Call us 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And do you think tribes need to be more involved in offering more aid to their members living in urban areas? Is this an issue you think tribes should pick up? 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And what are some of the other factors that make it difficult in some areas, like we're featuring today, like Gallup in Alaska, to keep people safe? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. And Lisa, is there any trend with the homeless population that are Alaska Native in Anchorage? Are there any trends you can tell us about?
I guess it's a very broad question, but one thing that we are seeing is there are many reasons why someone may come to Anchorage or someone who's in Anchorage already may end up homeless. I mean, there are tragedies if it's coming from natural disasters or lack of public assistance, domestic violence, health care, education, or lack thereof. You know, everyone, I believe, can picture someone in their mind when they consider who's homeless. However, I think that it's just ripe with stereotyping. We need to understand that there are so many different factors beyond, you know, the go-tos of alcohol or drug issues that could lead to someone being homeless. So I would say that when it comes to Native Americans or Alaska Natives in Alaska who are homeless, that they're a group that I believe, just like any other group existing in homelessness, that with the appropriate response, we can get, you know, get our elders off the street, get our youth off the street, get those who are experiencing mental health crises and issues off the street.
And, you know, that kind of goes back to our earlier caller who was asking, you know, why doesn't the media cover this? You know, do you think that stigmas play a large factor in all of this? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And do you feel that some cities are taking a good approach into helping people who are living on the streets, making sure that this winter doesn't take their life? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And a lot of times when we have these conversations, another part and factor are children, families of people who are homeless. Children are out there with their families too. How does this affect young people? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And in December, you know, there was a report coming out of the Bemidji area that reported 500 homeless children were turned away during the past year. Homeless children, what do you think about that? 1-800-996-2848. Are some of these shelters who have had to turn people away? Is that where we need to start to solve the problem? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. We're going to take a look from Seattle, and helping us with this view today is Camille Monzon-Richards, and she's the executive director of the Seattle Indian Center, and she is Tlingit. It's our pleasure to welcome her back to the hour. Hello, Camille.
Hello.
And Camille, you've heard the conversation so far. Is there anything you'd like to comment on?
I think that the first person, I believe his name is Carl, that is such a tragedy, and especially to come across your own son in that manner. That was very, very sad to hear. It's sad for anyone, but particularly what he shared with us. And here in Seattle, though, it's quite a bit different than Gallup, and even perhaps from Anchorage, because Seattle has become such an affluent place now, and a lot of the homeless people and poor people have been displaced because no one can afford the rents here in Seattle. We had someone, a family, come from the White Earth people, the Chippewa people, who came here because there are so many jobs available in Seattle now. And they come here with their families and because they have a trade. And they come here and they realize that they can't afford to pay $2,000 and $3,000 a month for rent for just an apartment. Forget about a house. Seattle has become inflated with love of self. And a lot of the people that we have here that are being placed in these that these high-rise condos are being built for don't want to see the homeless encampments that we have littered throughout the city. People that are homeless with their families live under the bridges and under the freeways, and it's a very tragic thing to see. We provide, the Seattle Indian Center has provided a safety net for people who are homeless, and particularly families and aging veterans from the Vietnam era that are homeless, that are American Indian or Alaska Native. And we do the best we can with trying to help house them and also work with other churches and and other safety net agencies that can help us keep people alive, especially during this cold spell. For the last couple of weeks, Seattle has experienced sub-freezing temperatures, and I know that there have been people that have passed away as a result of exposure. Seattle is known as a fairly moderate temperature city, but with the climate change coming, people think that, oh, well, it's they can live on the streets, and they can't when we get that cold snap. So we have opened up our facility to take people in who normally are turned away from the shelters or who do not want to go to the shelters. And we work primarily with American Indian and Alaska Native people, and they know us as a focal point where they can go to get assistance, whether it be for food or housing, clothing, jobs, and also we have a day center that we are working with a lot of the homeless people here in the city. It's not just American Indian and Alaska Native, but all races. And in fact, we have many other races involved as well. But of course, our primary concern is of our people.
And Camille, do you ever wish that there was more involvement from tribes? What are the hurdles there? You know, do tribes feel that this isn't their responsibility because it's off tribal land? What's your take, Camille?
My take is that I have my, you know, for the agency, we have always been able to approach some of the gaming tribes, for example, here, and we request funds for programs. For example, right now we need help with helping some of the older veterans from Vietnam. So we do approach the tribes. I mentioned the Puyallup tribe, the Tulalip people, and the Swinomish people, the Lummi people. They all support our efforts for housing, and especially for, you know, these people are not their tribal members, but they care. And that is what I've found in working with the various, there are 30 federally recognized tribes in the state of Washington. And here, just in King County, we have two, that's the Snoqualmie and the Muckleshoot people. And their responsibility is that they have a compassion for the people that are suffering, and they don't forget, and they do help. And the other group of people that we're working with and bringing them in from the streets are the young girls that are aging out of the sex trades. They were taken and used in the most awful, violent way, and now they're aging out of the sex trades at age 17 because their pimps don't want them, and we're helping try to get their lives, helping them to see that there's still hope after this. And we have approached the press about this terrible, terrible problem. And we have girls right now that we're housing, just especially during this really cold snap that Seattle has been experiencing. And there needs to be more done. The city of Seattle finally stepped up to the plate, and in partnership with King County government, they're listening to us. But you know what? They say they're going to give us money for shelter, but they're talking about shelter for 100 people. Listen, in Seattle last year at the one-year count on January 23rd of 2015, there were over 10,500 people that were homeless in Seattle, and that number has increased.
Wow, that's a lot. That number is really big, Camille, and especially when we take a look at, you know, how many of those people are coming from our tribal nations, and, you know, even in some of these urban centers, they're coming from different tribal nations too. Camille, when you think about, you know, if you could get all the right ears in one place to hear, you know, your thoughts, your ideas, you know, what would you like to say about making sure things change, or you know, what can be done? Camille?
I think that certainly starting earlier, don't try to put a Band-Aid over a really difficult issue. We need to work with our young people at school, and whether they be tribal schools or schools here in urban areas, we need to work with them and their families. We need to start earlier so that we don't see the kind of decay that we see with kids by the time they're 18 and 19 years old and are disillusioned. It has to be started earlier, and certainly in an affluent town like Seattle, which it never used to be but is now, because, you know, here people think, oh, Amazon and Microsoft and all these big companies and Starbucks, and there are jobs that are available. But a lot of our kids, you know, we're trying to prime them for employment at these different agencies and making sure that they continue with school. That has to be done. But we do need more partnerships like what the city has, City of Seattle, that includes the mayor and the city council, have partnered with King County. And, of course, the issue, of course, is always going to be money. But to me, it's a priority of life, and certainly the homeless have not been given a fair shot in this affluent city.
Wow. And, you know, I keep going back to that number coming out of Bemidji and just hearing, you know, when we think about providing for our children too, you know, what happens when people are turned away from some of these shelters? It really makes you think. And I want to go to Lisa for that. Lisa, is there anything you think that we should consider when we hear more people are being turned away from shelters and that is ultimately leading to people dying on the streets? Lisa, your thoughts.
I think because here at Brother Francis Shelter, we have a finite amount of space available and therefore how many people we can take in. So I believe that a city needs to consider what its reasonable accommodations and options are. We're always going to have folks who do not want to give up a life on the street. Here in Anchorage, then that means a life in a tent sometimes. So when we're considering what a city could do, I think it's coming up with the collaborative effort to leverage the resources that we have. We're all entering a place of where economically we're not as viable as we have been. So what can we do by saying, this is what I have, this is what you have, let's see what we can make to make it stronger, better, and then serve more people. I agree. The numbers are increasing. We're going to see more and more people end up on the streets. Homelessness is a result of so many things further up the river. So we need to either address them when they start or figure out how to make a timely and appropriate response later.
And Lisa, as we are talking about this, and know a lot of people are facing the cold, I know there folks at Brother Francis regularly talk about keeping warm. What are some of the things you'd like to say to people right now about being safe in the cold?
Right. I think number one is, it's find the appropriate clothing. Find what the resources are in your town and the services available in order to keep dry and keep warm. You know, the signs of frostbite, it's painful. You've got pins and needles. Your skin is burning. Circulation is failing, so, you know, the color is going to change. Slow warming. When things go too far, seek emergency services. We have a lot of guests here who have lost digits. They've lost heirs. You've got to be safe. And then for community members, I think it's checking in on your neighbor, the guy who is always in the alleyway, perhaps, when he's in a good mood, or perhaps that individual that you're passing on the sidewalk. We have to take care of each other. So if it's hypothermia and someone is shivering, you know, doing that slow warm-up, but getting the appropriate emergency services help if you need it.
All right. And Camille, we are getting close to the end of the hour. Any words you'd like to leave us with about being safe this winter? Go ahead, Camille.
Yeah. Well, in this area, or actually in any area, there needs to be a policy change with these various cities and counties that we're talking about. And you have to be very proactive when you're working with politicians, as the first person was talking about, you know, that we as Indian people don't like to have to go up there. But if you don't, people are going to die. And here in Seattle, the Seattle Indian Center has a drive every year. It's ongoing for socks and hats and gloves and blankets. And we do that. We're doing that now. And we do that starting from about November to February, because those are our coldest months.
And Camille, is there a number where people can reach you?
Yes, area code 206-329-8700.
All right, Camille, we are at the end of the hour. And folks, you know, we learned a lot today, and I appreciate you for sharing your hour with us today. Again, thanks to all of our guests, Carl Smith, Lisa Caldera, and Camille Monzon-Richards. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our senior producer is Monica Brain. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Stephen Emmons is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. Join us again tomorrow for a discussion on getting a grip on your finances. We'll be back tomorrow.
Support by the National Indian Health Board. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace runs through January 31st. Many Indian health clinics will host enrollment events with help available in person. You may qualify for low-cost plans, zero copays, and zero deductibles. Plus, your clinic keeps more resources when they can bill your insurer. You can set an example for your family, friends, and community by ensuring your needs are covered when you visit healthcare.gov/tribal.
Hi, I'm Raina Thiel, White House liaison to American Indians and Alaska Natives. The health of Native people is important to me. With health insurance, you can get care anytime and anywhere you need it. I have health insurance, and I encourage you to sign up too. Visit healthcare.gov/tribal or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Koyana.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.